There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan.
My brother from another mother.
On FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Good Friday. And the phone number, same as it ever was. And the text line, the same as well. 251-343-0106. 251-343-0106. Get through some of these texts here. And we're waiting on Senator Albritton. I've not been able to get him on the line. May happen here in the next minute or two. May not happen for the whole hour. I don't know. We'll work. What did they say on TV? We're efforting. Not efforting. Efforting. We're waiting on them to call. How about that? Let's see from the text. Let me get caught up here. So we have some time. Oh, you know what? I want to go back to this text. We talked about it before the break. I'd like to hear from you. I mean, from the unnamed texter, can text again, but from other people out there. Remember yesterday, we talked about the Artemis thing. They're doing the fly around now, and then I think, 2028, going to land on the South Pole, which I guess because it's too hard to get rare earth minerals out of China or Ukraine, we'll just go get them from the moon. You heard that earlier. They're like, well, you know, the same minerals, you know, because the earth and moon were together at one point, so the idea is the same minerals that or on the earth or up there. And are we good? Before I die, will we have mining operations? Will I be talking to buddies who are like, my grandson's gone to work on the moon. They're getting a top dollar there. Make a lot more money working up there than they are here on earth. But they're talking about, you know, what resources we may be able to mine out of the moon. But back to this texter said, no one is going to the moon, clown show. And I don't know if it means the whole thing's a clown show or I'm a clown show. I'm not sure. Either way. Happy Easter to you. Because I said yesterday, I said, if you think it's our first trip to the moon or return to the moon, either way, I thought it was exciting. This texture was the third choice. Says, we didn't go then, and we're not going now. So, do you think we have not been to the moon? And do you think we're not, this is all on a sound stage, which would be easier, right? If you're going to play conspiracies, they talk about the sound stage and all that they used, you know, the ideas they use this set up. And NASA screwed themselves on this to some degree because they faked up some stuff that went with it. Like to be able to show images. So they did, NASA bears some responsibility on that. But if you didn't believe that we did it then, if you don't believe we're doing it now, maybe it's the better technology you have. I mean, obviously, you see things now online that you can't discern fact from fiction, right? So could they easily mock this up? So do you think that we, I guess here's your choices. Number one choice is we went, I think the last mission was in 72. We've gone to the moon, and they're going to do it again. We're going to do it again in 2028. They're actually flying a tour around the moon now. So, and we'll eventually get there. They're projecting 2028. But just say that we went to the moon before, and we're doing the fly around now. Okay, that's one choice. Second choice is, we didn't do it back then. That was all, you know, to show up the Russians, and it was not real. But this time we are going to do it, and we're out there now. Or the third choice, which is texters, you know, put into the mix as well. We didn't do it then, and this is not real now. So let me know your thoughts at 251-343-0106. I'll read through. Dirt Digger, thank you. A very kind Easter message. And same back to you, Dirt Digger, and your family. Happy Easter to y'all. Ricky, okay, good. All right. War is a racket, and they're, it still sounds like that. They're robbing Americans for all their money, and I see a Mad Max scenario coming to America. Ricky is not fooled. Okay. So if the oil gets tight, you know, Mad Max, it was all about the oil, right, Ricky? You had the guy, the one who had the tanker and the boomerang that cut people's hands off. They were really. When is this happening? Because you have made some predictions in the past, Ricky, that, you know, have not come to fruition. But maybe the timing was just not right on that. And then goes on to say Trump in the House and the senators are getting rich. Why are Americans going bankrupt? Well, that's a fair question. Let's see. These are questions for the senator. Let's see. This from C.B. Carl said, Sean, I was out of earshot, so I'm not sure, but did you just read a text from a space unbeliever saying we didn't go to the moon in the 50s? If so, all I can say about that is, duh. Yeah, because we didn't go in the 50s. I mean, sometimes, C.B. Carl, I see things I could stop, but if I stopped at everything, you know, but correct. That you could. Maybe we should, did we go in the 60s? Maybe I should ask that texture, did we go in the 60s? But that texture doesn't believe we're doing it now either. All right, Michael says this. Do you know there's never been a single instance with Israeli soldiers in combat side by side, boots on the ground with Americans? They have and will always use our precious blood of our soldiers to achieve their national interest. Is that true? I don't know. I didn't know if it ever happened that way. I guess what scenario would it be side by side? I don't think there's ever been a scenario for that, has there? Michael goes on to say, and that's just another example of how ever since the globalists founded 1948 Israel and stole millions of generational homes of Christians, Persians, and Muslims, we've been treated as their slave goyim to do their bidding. All right. And Michael, you know what, Michael? He's consistent. Let's see here. Let's go. Same as ever. Oh, people making their choices here. DEI texture says choice number two. Monty said, who's the guy that, said name texture should have priority. Said, who's the guy that pushes the button and raises the oil prices? If we knew who that was, Monty, we'd have something, right? We'd have something. If we knew who that was, but you did hear from Jay Young. I think it is interesting. Because I mean, I like to have him on the show. I mean, the guy does oil and natural gas for a living, but it was that flip between Brent crude and West Texas Intermediate that I thought was pretty interesting as well, and where he thought prices would be, and he thinks it's going to stick. Remember, I asked him; he said they'd come down, but not before like midsummer. So keep watching it. All right, good. They're getting the sign from control room here. It looks like if I press this button. And I press this button over here. We can say hi to State Senator Greg Galbraith. Senator, appreciate having you on.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate your patience.
No problem. I know busy time out there with a little bit of breathing room before y'all go back. What, next week? How many days left in session?
Three legislative days.
So with that, there's one of them y'all hold out, right? I mean, I don't want to take this into a complete civics lesson, but there's a little bit that's important. One of these is important because y'all use it to make sure if the governor would veto something. It's like a safety mechanism, right?
Correct. Yep. And the Constitution, she has so many days in which to veto, and if she does not veto, it becomes law. So we have a day set normally outside that time frame, so that if there is a veto, we can come back and override the veto if need be.
So there y'all get it. There's from the senator's mouth. That's why they have the emergency day in there, the extra day in there. All right. I want to talk about what's happened in session so far. And let's talk about budgets here as we got the That's what are your gigs here? And general fund budget. If you had to score this baby, A, B, C, or D, what do you give it? You give it an A?
No government gives an A. Okay.
So what grade do you give it?
I think we're at a B. I think we did all right. Yeah.
Okay. And that being, because there's, this conversation, I think you and I have maybe had it before. I heard you talking to somebody that we're not falling off the edge of the cliff, but the money that came in, the federal money that was put aside and we gained interest on it and helped the budget there, that goes away, right? So that's not coming in.
Correct. That's correct.
Was that the spending that we used that money for, was it one-time stuff, or did we establish new beachheads that have to be paid for in state government?
As far as the federal money itself, we did not establish, as you say, beachheads or extra programs or things like that. We did not. Most of that was used for one-time issues, construction matters, infrastructure, and things such as that.
Okay.
The interest that we have been earning on that, we have not intentionally use those for new programs and things of such as that nature. Now, never underestimate government that can self-perpetuate itself, mm-hmm. All right? But we are not aware, I don't think, of anything specific that has grown from that. We've been using it judiciously for one time and to try to catch up with a lot of things.
Okay, so it's not something that's going to be like, well, we've expanded the government here, that money goes away, now we're in a situation where people say, hey, where's the funding for this thing that we got used to?
Oh, no, don't go that far now, Sean. inflation and other growth has occurred, and so when we start having a restriction in that growth, there's going to be weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth, yes.
Okay, so that's coming through. And also, as we return to the civics lesson for a second, what we're talking about when your job at dealing with general fund budget is super majority already earmarked, right? I mean, what out of 100%, how much of the general fund budget is in play every year for debate?
Well, let me clarify a couple of things. Okay. Yes, we are most egregiously earmarked. But those numbers and things get confusing very often. We do have many of the funds that are tied to and earmarked and restricted. However, every dollar of it has to be appropriated. And as a legislature, we have the responsibility and the duty that when we can, we move those funds around to where they're needed. We try to find out, and if there's legislation that we need to change to move those earmarks, we try to do that. That's not an easy thing to do either.
Right.
So it's not a matter that you simply hear our hands are chained. There are restrictions and there are hard guidelines and posts in the way, but there is opportunities to change. It just takes a long time to get some of that done.
Let's talk about
to answer your question.
Yeah.
To answer your question, close to 83%, I believe, is a standard figure that's earmarked.
So that you're left with that 18% for the negotiation.
That's about right.
All right. One of the big components here, too, I think about general fund Medicaid gets discussed a lot. I mean, how long, I mean, is this sustainable going forward, what we're paying? How are we going to do?
We're waiting to find that out from the feds. We have, that's one of the things that we have very little control over. It's all covered by Obamacare, Medicaid, and Medicare, okay? How much they pay and how much we have to pay. It is a forced insurance plan, and we do not have much control over that at all. So we've seen growth, and it will probably continue to grow as it always has.
Mm-hmm.
And I should say increase. I don't say grow. Increase. The cost will continue to increase. And we've got to make up that balance somehow. The difficulty comes in is, now this is simply my opinion, Sean. I'm not sure that the system that we have can stand for very much longer. We are we're spending more. The hospitals aren't getting it. The providers aren't getting it. It's all going into some other hole that we can't seem to find.
That scares me. You can't find. Where does it go? But where does it go? I mean, let's do the forensics on it. Where is it going?
I wish I knew. I hate to say it that way, but look, we have looked at this for years. We know that we spend $1 billion on Medicaid services, Medicare and Medicaid services in Alabama. And we know that most of that goes, they're supposedly to providers. But the providers are not being paid. They're being paid basically 17% of what the bill comes in as. And
okay. I'm waiting to understand this because I'm here slack-jawed.
If I could find someone to understand it, Sean, we'd be able to deal with it. It is intentionally, in my mind, it is intentionally complicated, and it is controlled by bureaucrats more than legislators. And it is, and as far as the state is concerned, there's very little that we can do, except simply refuse to take it and refuse to provide the services, which we can't do. We won't do that.
Right. So, they're waving at me. Can kind of messed up on schedule. Can you hold on a second, take a quick news break, and we'll come back?
Sure.
All right.
Sure.
All right. Sure. Okay. Coming back with Senator Greg Allbritton right here on Midday Mobile. We'll be back in just a minute.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 125 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile, continuing our conversation with Alabama State Senator Greg Allbritton. And you and I were talking, Senator, during the commercial break, that even with the things we just said, which I got to, I'm kind of, you know, obsessed on the fiscal things, that we're in a pretty good situation, you think, for the state, fiscally?
I think fiscally we're better off than we've ever been. We're meeting all the payments. We have a little bit of excess. We have savings accounts. Even in the general fund, we've got a little bit of savings set aside for the rough times. So we have... And we've done more for items that have been left undone for so long that I think we're making huge progress. We've got a lot to go. We've got mental health that still needs a lot of work and roads and bridges always. But I think we're doing in much better shape than we have been in decades.
Okay, let's while we're talking about money, a few minutes here before we go to the next break, SSUT. And the debate over that. I mean, I get the perspective from the municipalities. I've had mayors on here talking with me about it. But yours is what? About the deal as it sits now?
Yes, the deal as it sits now.
There's that amendment where it's not going to be every 10 years. I think it's going to be every 5 years it's reassessed or something to that effect.
We had a consensus to do that on a bill to change that to 5 years. And before I got it to the floor, that consensus fell apart. we discovered that there's going to be losers involved with this because population shifts. And SSUT is based on population shifts in transactions. And so no one's in a hurry to do harm to anybody. So we've had to put that on hold a little bit to try to figure out a way. We've got another meeting coming up here in about 10 days, I think, 2 weeks. We're going to sit down and try to continue to address it.
I mean, do you see substantive changes coming beyond this 10-year to 5-year change? Do you think, I mean, sort of the bigger ask from the municipality side of this? Yeah, I mean, how close are y'all on coming to an agreement?
I don't know how close we are. I know that we are at least we're talking and we're trying to figure out how. And I think each of us are beginning to see the different sides and seeing where each of us stands. And we've got to find a path to do good rather than to try to do harm. And that's kind of where we are. We don't know how to do that yet, but we've got some folks out taking a look at some possibilities of where we might go if there is a change. But right now, the stance is we better leave it alone until we figure out a real better way, not just a temporary solution.
And just a minute and a half here, but could you give me the kind of the rural area argument against the, you know, because the municipality folks have been on with me, and they're talking about, you know, items being bought in the cities and the number of people there. What's your argument from the rural areas? Why should you, you know, they get a bigger share or you know, the share as it is?
Well, I'm not sure they're getting a bigger share. They are getting a share. But the example I like to use is Chatham in Washington County. If a guy needs to buy a chainsaw and he has to go to Mobile to buy the chainsaw, and he buys the chainsaw and he pays the sales tax on the chainsaw in Mobile, and he takes the chainsaw back to Chatham, and he uses and cuts his tree down, and the tax stays in Mobile. He has to pay for the trip. He has to pay for the gas. He has to pay for all the things that go into making that purchase, and he uses it completely out of that, and yet his money goes into the tax base of Mobile. That there seems to be something incorrect about that. Why should the Chatham guy subsidize Mobile? So one argument I had, and I put a bill, and this started the conversation partly, is if this guy makes the purchase, then he should get the benefit. That money should go to where this thing is, and that's their argument on the SSUT. If it should follow, then Mobile should send that tax money to Chatham.
Gotcha. It follows the...
Does that make any sense?
I do hear what you're saying. It follows the person that purchases it. And we'll pick this up when we come back right after the news. Our guest, State Senator Greg Allbritton. I got some questions from the text line for the senator as well. We'll get to those. And we'll talk solar farm and moratorium and all that kind of stuff when we return.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 135, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Glad to have you all along on this Good Friday and a happy Easter weekend to you. Continue our conversation with Alabama State Senator Greg Allbritton. And I would say as we look at this, the concrete, go back to SSUT for a second because people would ask questions about that. But that is, it is... There's still negotiation going on. Am I safe to say that?
Oh, yes, certainly. Okay. And there will be. This is a difficult, complicated matter, and we're going to try to get this right.
Okay. All right. And also, several people suggested maybe somebody open up a chainsaw store in Chatham. that was their idea there. I want to talk about something that's got a lot of attention here lately. In a big, big way. I know the meeting coming up next week about the proposed solar farm there near Stockton. And you and Representative Simpson came out, it was last week or week before, and talked about some legislation. What is that? What is it attempt to do? What do you want to see happen here with this situation?
We have two bills, two dropped in the House and two dropped in the Senate, and they mirror each other. One, is a moratorium. Basically says, let's stop where we are, let's take a look, and let's find out if there's better ways, or do we have all the protections in place? That's one. The second one is transferring the regulations, if you will, to the local county commissions.
Okay, what does that look like? So let's like walk it through. Give me like, okay, I'm coming, I want to put a solar farm in somewhere. I'm with Sullivan Solar. What happens in this process?
Well, first off, let me tell you, we've done this in Baldwin County before. We passed a bill putting wind farms or windmills under the direction of the county. Now, I don't know what effect that's had, but I haven't seen any windmills going up. But it makes it so that the county commission would have the responsibility to develop a plan on the application process and all the other facets that come into play.
County commission can
I
say no. Can they say no?
Sure.
Without,
yeah, I think so. Uh-huh.
They can't go around that Sullivan wind farm. Can't go around the county commission and go to the state and go with PSC and go around them.
Well, in this case, in the circumstances we're in, the question comes in is, can the, if we do and pass this bill, does that mean that whatever the solar farm has done is moot. Do they lose all that money?
Mm-hmm.
Then you're looking at lawsuits and such. So I'm not sure that the commission could or even would want to stop the whole thing. I think what they may want to do is try to regulate it better, find out how and who and where, put setbacks in it, put reclamation aspects to it, that type thing.
As we look at this,
Guessing. I don't know. That would be my estimation.
But with the bill, it would be, this doesn't, if these mirroring bills go, it doesn't mean that the solar farm won't come to Stockton, or does it?
If we get the moratorium in,
for how long?
In the way that I have it written, that's a 1-year moratorium.
Okay.
If we get that in, that potentially has the way to put the brakes on it. Yes. Now, whether they stay or not,
that was basically my question. It puts it on its heels for the period of time in the moratorium, but they could, after the moratorium, the law hadn't changed, they could still come back and take another bite at the apple?
Possibly, yes. But then we'd have regulations in place along that line, too.
Gotcha.
See, that's part of the problem here, Sean. There was the public knew nothing about this.
Right.
Not only did the public, but the county commission didn't know much about it, nor did anyone else know anything about it. It was done all at some other level, PSC level, and actually they're citing codes from the IRS to be able to move forward with this. So it has to deal with all the federal money that's flowed into these industries right now.
The IRS is involved in this?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. They're in everything. Although, don't get mad, IRS. Stuff will be filed before the 15th. So with that, this is somewhat of a tangled web here, because it does deal with a lot of things that have happened or may happen in the future on this. And you mentioned PSC, right? And that's something I've been very interested in for a long time, since the start of this radio station. The PSC, in the case of a lot of people I talk to from Baldwin County, doesn't seem to be interested or engaged with the people in Baldwin County on this. Do you hear the same?
I do.
Okay.
And I would also say that PSA is not engaged with they're engaged with very few people.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So how do we fix that? Is this new bill, is this going to, it seems like there's some good things in it, but it doesn't mandate these meetings or to open the books. I mean, we already have that kind of on the books, and we're not doing it now. Do you see us in the future having, hey, let's sit down, let's open the books, see what you're spending money on? Is that going to be our reality ever?
Our goal, first off, is to get correct and proper representation there. Right now, there's 3 PSC members, and all of them live in the same general area.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Which is not here.
Well said. That's correct. So what we're trying to do initially in this is find and make sure that we get representation on the PSC, so that someone that from here can represent us, so that we have a voice there. That's number one.
Okay. Number two, what do you see going forward for, one of the members is from here. Hopefully many, I like the idea of the use of 7 congressional district, federal congressional districts or something to that effect. But now we have also the executive branch with this, lack of a better term, energy czar in the mix. Will they be able to direct? The way I read it is like they could maybe set the agenda, but are they a vote? Like what hand will the executive branch have over what I thought was like a separate entity, right, from the executive branch or legislative? I mean, this is its own thing, the PSC.
Well, you're looking at what you're looking at now is the whether we appoint folks or elect folks.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the elections will be there on all of them. We've just got to get 7 people on there to begin the representations as soon as we can. That's why we did the first to put the 7 on there, and then to stagger. They will all be elected, I think, by 28 or 30, one of that, all of them will be elected positions.
Okay. But what will the play be for that, the person that's adjunct to the governor, the executive branch,
right.
I call it the czar, whatever, the commissioner of energy or whatever, will they be able to steer the discussion? What, like, in your understanding, what's their job going to be with PSC?
That has to be... look, my thought is, and it's, I won't say it's wide open, but there's a lot of opportunities there for guidance. We've got to have somebody there that's accountable, that we can hold accountable. And that's the theory between having someone fully in charge. Now, the seven members is going to be much like any other board, to give the policy and give the direction, and then the other guy executes. So that's what I understand this is the goal here.
Okay.
Not trying to put, not to make these guys advisory in nature, but to have them setting the policy.
Right. So if the czar, just throwing scenarios out, but if the czar says, hey, we're not going to talk about this thing, the members of the PSC voted, but the person that's adjunct to the governor from the executive branch can't say, no, that's not coming up. You're not going to put that on your docket.
Sounds like we have another fight between the legislature and the executive, doesn't it?
It does.
And that's what would happen. We'd have bills that would come in to change that up, just like what we do, whether it be pardons and paroles or others.
Okay. So I'm just... because that's my worry. But, we had this idea, let's reform the PSC. And there's, like I said, the majority of stuff I saw in the bill was good. I'm worried that there's not the teeth of requiring these hearings, these open book hearings, although I've been told in things I read that they could have done it already, and we hadn't done it since 82. But
exactly.
Is that correct? That's what I've read.
I think that's how I read it. Yeah.
Okay. And so I guess my worry about that person under the governor was their ability to say, whatever the PSC decides, we're going to do this thing. We think this is in the interest of the ratepayers in the state, and that person who's the overseer from the executive branch comes in and says, no, you're not. We're not doing that this week. That, I'm putting it in regular people language, but you're following what I'm saying, what I'm asking.
I do. And that's a valid concern. And I don't doubt that something like that may happen at some point down the road. It happens with every and any government agency like that. It's a power shifting and power grabbing on personalities and other matters. But always remember, you always change out the governor, you always change out the legislature, and we can always change out these things as we need them. And it's an ongoing matter. There's nothing in government that's permanent.
It isn't, but there's
some confusion.
Yeah, but there is some, even if the names change, there's something about Montgomery, Senator, that I was just up there last week for, there's some of the, even though elected people sometimes change, the players and the power are still there.
Yep, you're right.
They're.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
It's still this. I see, even if that legislator changes, I'm at an event and the person talking to that legislator is the person I saw talking to the person previously holding that office.
Yep, you're right. I understand. Listen, that's why we had the term lobbyist come in, I guess, from the 1860s.
Yeah.
When you look at what we have, we can be critical of everything that's there, and I acknowledge that. But also, I can tell you, there's not a real better way of doing it, because it's like a balloon. Once you squeeze it on one side, you'll have other come out on the other side. Government needs to be watched. It needs to be controlled. It needs citizen involvement. And that's what's going to make any government function properly.
Yeah, it's the, and I agree. And I've said this sword is two-sided. I told everybody that, while there has to be legislation, we go to, make sure you turn out and elect your, and I have those folks on my show. I really wish people would be engaged when they go to vote, know the names of people for PSC, and those people with PSC would tell me how they're going to do a better job for we, the ratepayer. Because, just kitchen table simplistic stuff, and I've jawed on about it for a long time, but I can look across the border at Georgia, see what they're paying per watt and what we're paying, and they're both Southern Company. It's... Just
and
tell me why.
A great delta there. Yeah.
I mean, just like that's with the open book thing too. I'd like to see why is it less in Georgia than here? Just show me. Just tell me why.
Good point. Excellent questions. And I'd like to know. And hopefully with these changes, we can get there and find some of those things. Because PSC in the past has been more of a buffer. Now I better shut up. I'm getting too far off base there. I better hush.
No, that's what I want, though. I mean, this buffer of PSC, these are utilities. They don't have to compete in the free marketplace. Therefore, the only way to make any change, we can't do that through the marketplace. So it has to be through our representatives from Public Service Commission.
It has to be from government. Exactly. If you're going to make it a monopoly, it has to be subject to the government because it's not subject to the customers.
You know, and it's a trade-off, right? You'd say, well, who wants to have oversight like this? Well, do you want a guaranteed profit? And do you want to be a monopoly? Okay, I want to be guaranteed profit and be a monopoly. Okay, well, the other side of this deal, the ledger sheet, is you have oversight from the consumers.
Exactly. Oversight through by and through the government that's given you that monopoly. And given the customers a voice. And that voice, unfortunately, when it's a monopoly, is through the government.
Yes, there's no other way to do it. But, you know, I've said this before. Nope. If it was a free market, you'd say, well, I don't like what they're doing with my power, my water, my gas. I'll just use the other place. Well, you can't. So it's the only lever I have to use is the government here. And I just want to make sure that we do the best job of that. You know, with reform for PSC, I want to see something different. And it may come out.
And if I may go back to our earlier discussion, Sean, that's exactly where we're headed with our health care.
That how can somebody get involved at the same way? What mechanism can we use to figure out where the other 73 cents went in that dollar that went in Medicaid?
I hold, since I've been on the general fund chair, I've held public hearings twice a year. Nobody likes me doing that except me. but they are open, and they're inviting, I hope, and the public can attend. And I would encourage folks to find out and to watch and to listen and to submit questions and things. This is an opportunity. That's what I've been trying to develop in my tenure.
Okay. Well, I'll say this as we wrap up. Senator, I will, when those meetings come up for the next time, you have public service announcements we run, right? So they are free for you know, nonprofits here. So this is nonprofit. I'll run you a schedule on this radio station to let everybody know when these meetings are so people can show up.
That's great. And I will, and this, take these me up are on streamed it. Also. I will. And these are streamed also live. So we'll work on get that to you. In fact, Sean, I usually do these in August and again in January.
Okay, we'll set it because I will absolutely publicize it to the nth degree so people know what's happening.
Okay, that'll be great,
Senator Albritton. Thanks for your time today. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk soon.
Wonderful. Thank you.
All right, coming right back to wrap it up here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Think about this weekend. If it's way too easy to hide Easter eggs in the yard because of the junk, maybe it's time to get 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Or you're just going to get that spring cleaning done. You got junk you want gone. You need my man Trey with 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Make that appointment today, get it done next week, or whenever you're ready, because that's how they work. You go online to 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com, or better yet, talk to them in person. Call them. The name is the number, 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Find out the day that works for you, the time that works for you. They set an appointment. They show up, and all you got to do is point at the junk you want gone. That's it. And say that, and they'll quote you a price right there on the spot. If you say yes, well, then they'll get to work right then, even if there's some old Easter eggs under the junk they're picking up. So do it. Make that appointment and get Trey, my buddy, to come to your place, your house, storage unit, wherever you got junk with 1-800-GOT-JUNK. All right. I know tons of texts. We're trying to respond to these after the show, but I do want to do this because it's self-serving, because I'm interested in it, and it's my show. As we wrap up here, the list is in for the top merit badge of the year, the top merit badge rankings of the year. So scouting folks, get this. The top 10 least earned chart out there showed two that I thought odd. Cybersecurity and AI merit badges were some of the least pursued. Come on, kids. What's top? Well, a lot of it has not changed here. And people that did scouting will nod their head along with me. Number one on the list, did anybody guess? Yeah, first aid. Number two, citizenship in the world. Number three, citizenship in the nation. I'm not crazy about that juxtaposition. It should be citizenship in the nation, then the world. Swimming. Number four, number five, communication. Number six, citizenship in society. I don't think that existed back when I was in Troop 147. Camping at number seven. Come on, kids. Personal management, I like that at eight. Personal fitness at nine. Cooking at 10. Environmental science at 11. Citizenship in the community at number 12. And there you go. It's in the lineup for this year. Fishing came in at 22. Y'all have a great weekend. Paul Feinbaum on the way next.